everybody, Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy, brought to you every week here on KCRW. And this week we're going to listen to the comedy of David Steinberg. David Steinberg was at one time a rabbinical student in Toronto or somewhere in Canada, and then went on to achieve a fair amount of success as a stand-up comedian, to the point where his biblical monologues were actually responsible for getting the Smothers Brothers thrown off the air. Actually, they were probably more of an excuse for CBS to cancel the Smothers Brothers than the actual reason, but that's neither here nor there. From there, he went on to become a fairly successful commercials and TV director, which is what he does now most of the time, and some features, but mainly television stuff. And I think in some ways it's sort of a loss to the world of comedy, because I think that at his best, his stand-up comedy was incisive and perceptive, and also the ever-important, very funny. So let's listen to some of it. David Steinberg, to the best of my knowledge, has made four records. The first one is a very old record and is sort of, I don't know, he wasn't quite polished at that point, and it is mainly the biblical material. Then there's a second record called Disguised as a Normal Person, in which he reprises the best of the biblical material. So that's what we will play the biblical material from towards the end of the program. And then there's an album called Booga Booga. And although it has what was probably his most famous routine, the psychiatrist routine, where the psychiatrist is crazier than the patient and sneaks up on him and goes, booga booga, I don't think that really plays too well on the record, so I won't be playing that. But I think that album as a whole is very good. And then his last record was sort of a mess called Goodbye to the 70s, and I don't think we'll be playing any of that, especially since it's sort of dated already. Anyhow, let's go ahead and listen to David Steinberg from 1970 and then again in 1974. First from 1970 from his album Disguised as a Normal Person. Ladies and gentlemen, David Steinberg.
Right off, you know, the name doesn't work. When they say, and now David Steinberg. It's David Steinberg that doesn't work. You see, that's not the normal American way. The name should be changed. That's what they think normal is. But instead of going from Steinberg to Stein, it should go from Steinberg to St. So there's no possibility of recognizing any Russian Jewish heritage there. That's the first step in an attempt to be normal. The next step is you cut off the nose. And the people that do that, they cut off their noses. They walk the streets. They have big eyes and big ears and a little dot where their nose used to be. And now they're forced to marry people with similar characteristics. Then one sunny Tuesday morning, they wake up and they have a kid who has a nose like a macaw. And it's God's way of going, booga booga! The second thing that doesn't work for me is being a comic. A comic is a hard thing to identify with. You know, how do you have the right to be a comic in this day and age when you have people like Buckminster Fuller and R.D. Lang and Marshall McLuhan to be influenced by? Then I wonder, if I had an opportunity to do anything, would I really do it? Like if God were to say to me, David Steinberg. If God were to say to me, David Steinberg, that would be enough. I think I could roll with that for a bit. If God were to say, David Steinberg, you talk so much, go ahead, do anything you want, I will back you. I'd say, God, once before my life here is over, allow me to appear on the dating game. Because in times of trials, strange things appear to us as salvation. And the dating game is the strangest of things. It's exciting in a surrealistic way. I love this show. The girls who come on the show have to take a test to get on. If they have an IQ anywhere around that of the average plant, they are whisked away to Hollywood, where they're allowed the freedom to create metaphors on national television that would drive Dylan Thomas to drugs. they go number one. And number one is bachelor number one. And bachelor is a television euphemism for virgin. But it's a special kind of virgin if you make eye contact with him. It's the kind of guy that's never gonna get it. And the girl goes, number one, if we were on a date, would you kiss me goodnight on the first date? Huh, number one? Would ya? Here's the plan. I'd be in the number one spot, disguised as a normal person. Kiss you goodnight? No, my dear. Probably what I'd do is take you to the dingiest hotel in town. I'd take out the black whip and the boots. The corset with the red ostrich feathers. I'd probably do wonderful things to you with crazy foam and silly putty. I'd most likely work you into a frenzy with a spatula. I'd have you run around the room in the rubber Annette Funicello Mickey Mouse costume, allowing you to put the ears anywhere you like. In general, I'd work you into a moment of sexual ecstasy, unparalleled in womanhood. And she'd go, number two. I like to think of myself as being really perceptive, you know, but I'm not. I know I'm not, but yet I still fool myself by thinking that I am. People always fool me. One kind of person that always fools me is every girl I meet. I met a girl at a party, a Vogue magazine type, cheekbones 2 feet above her head. The epitome of sophistication. We chat a bit and we discuss Renee Clair and Susan Sontag. We talk a little further. We find that we both share a common interest in the early works of Paul Klee. I invite her to the Sunday afternoon Vivaldi recital by the Pro Musica Antiqua, and she already has tickets. I fly home on the wings of Pegasus, and I find that she sent me a copy of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. With a little note. Here, read this. It's really cute. And now I know exactly what I'm dealing with. My sophisticate, my Sophia Loren, has revealed herself to be Trisha Nixon. And now that her cuteness is out in the open, I know exactly what to expect, because I've been there before. Cute to me is someone who is always cheerful, especially when you don't need it. Someone who is willing to go anywhere on the spur of the moment in the name of fun. I say, let's go back to my place. And she says, how about the Staten Island Ferry? The nickel ride, 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's 30 degrees below zero. I say, let's go back to my place. She says, I've got this great idea. I know this fantastic place where you can get triple scoop strawberry ice cream sundaes, and it's only a 3.5 hour drive. Cute will go anywhere and do anything except come to my place. And the ones that do shouldn't. Imagine you have attained undreamed of horizons of virtuosity. You have devised and executed maneuvers that would mystify even Masters and Johnson. You have become to sex what Julia Child is to a chicken. And as you're lying there in the afterglow of a moment that poets devote their whole lifetimes to describe, she turns to you and says,
"Hey, that was cute."
The all-time freak of cuteness was Walt Disney. Walt thought that mice were cute. They're not. They are beady-eyed little rodents. And he had Cinderella sleep with two of them.
Then, after that record, but before the next one, David Steinberg got married. And this is what he had to say about that.
My wife is Italian, and my family are Russian Orthodox Jewish Canadians. And Gentiles, to my father, were people, although intelligent, they sell their children for whiskey. It fell into a category in my family. It wasn't against Gentiles. My father came over from Russia and settled into Canada. It was the outside world. It was they. He'd stand in the grocery store Christmas Day and look to the heavens and wait for the first fleck of snow to wend its lazy way down to earth. And as it would touch ground, he'd go, "Ah! They got their snow again for Christmas." You gotta respect prejudice like that. It has backbone. I grew up in an enlightened home. They taught me that non-kosher food was tantamount to kryptonite. I want to be married by an Orthodox rabbi. This is by no stretch of the imagination exemplary of Orthodox Judaism, because the rabbi and I did not hit it off. Not that I didn't like him any more than he didn't like me. It didn't work, you know. I could see from the moment that we walked into his study some tension. And I wanted to determine, well, where is this hostility coming from? Is it me or is it him? Oh, he let me know very fast. He looked at me and he looked at my then fiancée Judy's blue Italian eyes. And back at me, then at her, then it came out. He said, "Mr. Steinberg, your wife, of course, is a Jewess. I said, "Yeah, yeah. And I'm the Jewee." Well, now that our hostility is out of the closet, there's no retreating. We're just looking for that moment in which to get away from each other. And he said, "Has she been converted?" Well, when he said converted, it sounded so demeaning to me, like she was worth a point in football. Who converted her? "Oh, you Premian from Miami." It was a tough game. We were on the 20. Went through the goalpost, came down a Jew. Never saw anything like it, Rabbi. Fantastic. We finally found a reform rabbi bordering just on this side of Nazism. I'll tell you something. I'm 33 years old now. And at 33, I'll tell you a kind of truth that you're not supposed to admit to. There is nothing to be gained by getting older. Nada, zip, nothing. You gain wisdom, you gain maturity, but you also gain their co-hosts for that week. Lines around the eyes, and your body starts to go. And I believe that lines around the eyes and your body going cancel wisdom and maturity.
Just like scissors cuts paper and rock smashes scissors.
You know, I wonder at what point does confusion stop in your life? I thought at one point I was going to get older and I'd stop being confused. But it doesn't quite work that way. I still can't figure out a lot of things. I don't know whether New York's a better city than Los Angeles. I don't know whether Diet Pepsi is better than Tab. I don't know whether John Chancellor is better than Walter Cronkite. So I go back and forth between New York and Los Angeles, and I drink Fresca. And I watch Howard K. Smith. At least that way I know I'm wrong. And in these transient times, thoughts like that are very important to me. I'm facing up to a few facts. Now all I've got to do is look around. 28 years old, Thomas Wolfe had already written You Can't Go Home Again. That's terrific. 21, Bobby Dylan had already written Blowin' in the Wind and stolen his name from the great Welsh poet Dylan Zimmerman. And at 19, Alexander the Great had conquered Gaul and Mesopotamia, was known clear around the world, and didn't even have to do the Mike Douglas show. It puts things into perspective for me. I know how I'll handle it. I figure when I'm 60 years old, I'm going to have my eyes fixed and my nose fixed and my ass lifted. I'm going to have Burt Reynolds' body and Merle Oberon's face. And I'll have wisdom and maturity, but at least my neck won't look like the escalator at Bloomingdale's. Groucho Marx to me is a great old man. He's an example to me of someone who's not going gentle into that good night. He's 83 years old, and I asked him to describe Chico to me, and he thought for a second, and he said, Chico brought gonorrhea to the vaudeville circuit. I hope my brother remembers me that well. When I first went on television, the first time I did this biblical material, it was amazing the response that we got. I guess we were in an area that people weren't used to. And I did Moses for the first time on The Tonight Show, and I got thousands of letters. I got letters immediately from Baptists. And their attitude was kind of, no good what you're doing, Mr. Steinberg. You're putting down the Jewish people, and that's what we do. The second most letters came from Reform rabbis who wanted to know just exactly who Moses was. And the third from the Jehovah's Witnesses, and they just write in to have someone to talk to. Would the congregation please be seated for this evening's sermon? Tonight's sermon deals with the exciting personalities of Jezebel, Lot,
Joshua,
and Moses,
all of whom had a wonderful rapport with God,
whom I'm sure you'll all remember from last week's sermon. Jezebel lived in the time of Elisha the prophet, was immortalized in later years by Frankie Lane. And Jezebel, the Bible tells us, lusted after everything that passed by her doorstep. And God devised a punishment. He said, Jezebel, every time you lust, I shall put a fly in your ear. A bzz-bzz fly. And every time you lust, that fly will buzz around as a reminder of your carnal sins. So God gave Jezebel this anthropomorphic zap. He took the fly went from her ear into her head. And there the fly stayed. And Jezebel continued to lust. And each time that she did, the fly buzzed around. But Jezebel liked it. Joshua was standing on the outskirts of Canaan, which is Israel's nickname. And he turned to the two men on his side and he said, "You two men, go walking through Canaan and tell me if the land is good. If it's good, we'll bring in all of the people." And the two men go walking through Canaan. And they come upon the home of Rahab the harlot. And they spend there the night. And they come back and they say, "Oh, Joshua, it's good." Lot lived in Sodom and Gomorrah, the twin cities they were called. And every form of evil imaginable took place there. And God looked down, saw that things were bad. Every time God looks down, things are bad. Maybe if he wouldn't look down so much, things would pick up. God said, "Lot, leave Sodom and Gomorrah, for their evil has come up before me, and I'm going to destroy these towns in fire and brimstone. But whatever you do, Lot, don't look back." Lot is walking on the outskirts of town. Lot's wife turns to him and says, "Lot." "What's the matter with you? You should have stayed there. That was fun." Lot continues to walk. She says, "Lot, gotta be aggressive with God. You can't always be passive." Lot continues to walk. She says, "Lot." Lot says, "Dear, God told me to tell you to look back." When Moses was a little child, he cast off a cherubic light from his face. So his father turned to his mother and said, "Let's take this little child and thrust him into the Nile so that we might have normal lighting in here again." Moses is raised in the palace of the Pharaoh. When he's 30 years old, he goes wandering in the desert, chasing after a sheep. Moses was a prophet, not a pervert. In the distance, he saw a bush that was burning, yet it would not consume itself. A voice came out. "Moses." Moses, with the astute bearing of a prophet-to-be, runs to the sheep and looks in its mouth. God says, "Moses, take off your shoes from off of your feet." God says in his redundant way. "Where the land that you are standing upon is holy land." Moses takes his shoes off of his feet, approaches the burning bush, and burns his feet. God goes, "Aha! Third one today." Moses swore. We're not sure what he said. There are many Old Testament scholars who to this day believe it was the first mention of Christ in the Bible. "Moses, go unto the Pharaoh and tell him to let your people go." "
Moses says, "Who shall I say sent me?" God says, "Whom?" Moses says, "Whom?" God says, "I am that I am." Moses says, "Thanks for clearing that up." Moses goes unto the Pharaoh, his staff in one hand, his little brother Aaron in the other. "Pharaoh, let my people go." Pharaoh says, "Who sent you?" Moses says, "You're not going to believe this." And the Pharaoh didn't believe him. And so God destroyed all of the land with that mystical sense of humor that is only his. Thank you very much. You've really been delightful. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes our second show for this evening. And as you leave this evening, would you please leave by the side exit door? Thank you and good night.
Don't forget to leave by those exits, just as he said. It's very important on radio. Let's see, that's going to wrap it up. We heard smatterings of comedy from David Steinberg. Next week's show is going to be a special show. If you don't know who Billy Connolly is, you want to listen anyway, because you will be introduced to him not only in excerpts from his recorded work, but in a conversation that I had with him in his hotel room a couple months ago before a performance at UCLA. He's a very funny Scottish comedian. Very popular over in the British Isles and almost totally unknown here by anyone other than expatriates. But a very, very funny guy. And we had a nice chat, so I hope you can hear that. What else is there to tell you? The address is Bob Claster, C-L-A-S-T-E-R, Funny Stuff, KCRW, 1900 Pico Boulevard, Santa Monica, California, 90405. Don't forget to enclose a phone number so that I can get back to you. Daytime or nighttime, whichever you like. Daytime I prefer, but whatever. And that's about it. So until next week, this is your host, Bob Claster, thanking you for listening and reminding you, as always, to keep that sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.